Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far, as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So I was just showing Melanie before we started, I was showing you your new blog, or the new design of your new blog.
It looks very spiffy.
It's very spiffy and modern, and now works on phones.
Woohoo!
It actually looks really nice on phones, I have to say. So if you don't know, Melanie's website is thewinedarksea.com. The WineDarkSea is all one word.
Yeah, it's my sadly neglected website. I don't think I've even blogged in like a month.
Your last post is book notes from August and September.
I know. Oh, gosh. It's so bad.
My blog at betnet.com. is actually does much better because I post links to every episode of this show to there. So there's something every week. Woohoo! It's just a repeat of this. I know.
I mean, I go through seasons.
Season. That's right. That's right. You'll be back at it. And there's plenty eventually of good stuff there. I was actually going through your top posts and just to check out, make sure how the older posts are looking. And there's some good stuff there. In fact, Soul Cakes is on there.
Soul Cakes.
Soul Cakes. Remember, those are the cakes you make for All Saints and All Souls.
I didn't know I blogged about them.
Yes, a few years ago. All right, so before we get started into the rest of the show, we got some listener feedback, which is nice. This comes from Benjamin Blanchard, who wrote on YouTube at the SQPN YouTube channel, said, I listened to this episode, our most recent one. Then later that day, my mother brought me the Everlasting Meal Book out of the blue.
Oh, fun.
Melanie mentioned that book last time. I thought it was quite serendipitous. Dom's pumped up ramen sounds great. It is great. Let's just admit it. It was a stroke of genius. Love hearing you guys talk about what you're cooking and reading, and I'd definitely watch a cooking video if you made one. Keep up the good work, you guys.
Oh, thanks. I don't know that a cooking video is in the future.
We've kind of mentioned it to one another, but it's hard. Well, I mean, the part of the problem is just the layout of our kitchen, our tiny small kitchen.
Yeah.
We don't have like an island. It's a galley kitchen. So it's hard to get video of what we're doing. And the counter is kind of dark.
It's very dark.
I mean, it's fine for what we're normally doing, but it's not like it doesn't have enough lighting for a video. But maybe we'll do sometime. Maybe when spring rolls around again, we'll do some outdoor cooking video.
That could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. On my new grill when I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to get a new grill, folks. My Weber has developed a rust spot. My beloved 14 or 15-year-old Weber.
It's like 15.
It's like 15. It's older than Bella. So yeah. It has developed a rust hole in the bottom. I'm sad, but a little excited about getting a new charcoal grill. Anyway, that's for the spring and tax refunds.
Yes.
So I thought I was going to get a smoker, but I guess I'm getting a regular grill. But thank you, Benjamin, for the feedback.
Yes, thank you very much.
We love hearing from you guys, and it's really awesome to know that you're out there listening, and that your mom is the guardian angel of your mom's guardian angel apparently thought you needed to hear about the Everlasting Meal book.
I want to know your feedback too after you've like read it, looked at it, cooked from it. Yes,
it's a fascinating book. Fascinating. I want to check it out myself because it sounds fascinating. All right, so moving on. What's been going on? Well, most of the week's interestingness really happened in the last couple of days. We're recording this on All Saints Day on Sunday, and basically the two biggest events of the week, as far as I can remember, were on Saturday when we were supposed to get a dusting of snow. Melanie, did we get a dusting of snow?
We got a lot of snow. It was snowing when I woke up. And it was snowing at dinner time, and it snowed steadily all day long.
Yes. Now, before lest people get the idea that we had a blizzard, we did not.
It was not a blizzard.
We got 4.5 inches of snow, which...
4.5 inches is a lot for October in Massachusetts.
Well, in fact, it is a record for October in Massachusetts. In fact, a record for the snowfall in the month of October, like on the last day of the month, we got the record amount of snowfall. What was it? No, it was Friday, actually. It wasn't Saturday. It was Friday.
You're right. It was Friday.
Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. And yes, so we had a record amount of snowfall on the, like, I think people think, oh, it's New England. You guys get snow in September. We do not.
Let me tell you, I thought when I was moving here from Texas, oh, I'm moving to New England. There's going to be lots of snow. I moved here in 2000. And the year, the winter of 2000, 2001, and then the next winter of 2001, 2002 were two of the least snowy winters I've experienced in Massachusetts. I was sorely disappointed. There was almost no snow.
Yes. But Massachusetts is, especially like Eastern Mass, the Boston area, it we don't get a ton of snow by, you know, on a regular basis, usually average, on an average basis is the word I'm trying to reach for. 2015, let's just take that out of the equation for now, because that is the outlier of outlier years. But in general, what happens is we'll get flakes in October, like a flurry.
Right.
November, you can get a little bit of snow that sticks. There have been times we've gotten big storms. I remember when I was in my late teens, we got a Thanksgiving blizzard. Okay, that can happen. But in general, we might get a little bit of like an inch of snow or something like that. December, also generally not a snowy month. You'd think so, but it isn't.
No white Christmases around here, really.
Yeah, rarely.
I mean,
rarely.
The kids remember like a white Christmas, but that was like a powder sugar dusting of snow. It was not like snow.
We've had a few. No, we've had a few where there's been snow on the ground. Snow falling on Christmas Eve or Christmas is rarer than hen's teeth. But we've had like snow, like a little bit of snow on the ground. Our snowy months are January, February, and into March, really.
Right.
January, February is when we usually get most of our snow. In February really is the month for snow here. But and then by April, if we're lucky, and if it's not 2015, it's turned. Spring is starting to come around. So, I mean, to be honest, I'd prefer the snow in front loaded. I'd prefer the snow in December, January, and then like by the end of February, I'm ready to start looking at spring. I got to find the place in the country that maybe that's the Carolinas. Maybe it's Eastern Tennessee that I should be living in. I like an early spring and winter in December and January, and you know,
I don't know if there's anywhere. I don't think that exists.
I don't. It's the perfect weather doesn't exist. I know
it doesn't.
So we got snow, and I was working, so I didn't go outside in it. The kids were out there shoveling, which is nice. They're actually at the
Nobody
point now.
Actually asked them to shovel. They just went outside to play in the snow, and oh, by the way, they picked up some shovels and shoveled.
They're at the age now where the idea of shoveling, well, okay, but keep in mind, by the way, first snowfall of the year. It's magical. It's fun. It's cool. By like the fifth storm in February, they're going to be huddled inside like, there's more snow. And I'll be out there with the snowblower trying to get the thing cleared again, because that's how it always ends up. But we'll see. But it was kind of cool to have some snow. It was
really beautiful.
It was amazing. Now, here's the problem with snow in October is the trees have not lost their leaves. And as anyone who has experienced this before knows, when the snow is heavy and it's wet, so this was wet snow, and it sticks and it hangs on, and leaves give it more surface area to hang on to. So the trees are holding more, and that means breaking branches, and there are broken branches everywhere around here.
None in our yard, though.
Not in our yard. You know, we were kind of lucky that way. But like, yeah, the trees are some of them have green leaves, some of them are colorful, and underneath the snow, it was gorgeous.
Right. The maples, our maples, one of them has lost its leaves already, but one of them was covered in golden leaves and one was covered in red leaves, and they're just frosted with snow. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful.
And then on Saturday when we went to the farmer's market, it's funny, the farmer's market is in Hingham, which is a town right on the coast. And right on the coast, like it was, as you drove through Hingham, the snow went from several inches to nothing. There was literally, like as you got to the right by the coast, there was no, it was green. It was no snow anywhere. But as we were driving down there, like all the trees, well, after a snowfall, a wet snowfall, the snow sticks, like I said. And the next day when the sun is bright and beautiful in the blue skies, and it hasn't yet melted the snow off of the tree branches, It is gorgeous. It's like a frosted world. It is really amazing.
Right. It was, everything was, because it was raining before the snow started, everything was wet. And so the snow stuck beautifully and just stayed sticking.
Yes. Yes. So it was nice. It was really nice. And it was cold. Yeah. On Halloween, cold to start. And that impacted Halloween. So if you remember last week, we talked about what are we going to do? We were trying to figure out what we were going to do for Halloween, given that it is 2020 and there's this concerns that the infection rate is rising and how are people going to do this and how many kids are going to come to the door and should our kids go out?
Anyway, the answer was we had about maybe 20 kids tops.
Right.
And most of those were in like a couple different groups, like maybe four or five groups.
Right.
There was hardly.
So I took the kids out. You stayed and handed out candy. And there was hardly anybody out.
Yeah. There was very few kids out. And I mean, really,
it was cold, for one thing. There was snow on the ground.
There was snow and slushy snow on the ground by that point.
And there weren't a lot of people giving out candy. Like, we had to go all the way. We went all the way, like, up our street and then down the next street. And there were maybe, like, usually it's 50% of people giving out candy. People aren't home from work or they just don't want to give out candy, whatever it is. So that's usually, I think it was half of that. I think there might have been
like a quarter of houses were giving.
Like maybe 10 places that actually gave out candy. And most of them, there might have been two places where people were giving out candy at the door. No, it was a few more than that. Most places, there was probably more than 10 houses, but most places had tables with stuff on it, come, you know, take one sort of situations.
Yeah, I think that a couple people skipped our house.
Because they didn't see the table.
Yeah, like I heard people getting kind of close up to the door and then like leaving again.
Interesting.
So I answered the door. I wore my mask. I handed out candy with the kitchen tongs, so I wasn't like sticking my hands into anyone's bags. Or having kids stick the hands into a bowl. We had some cute kids. Some fun costumes.
That's my favorite part, is seeing the kids, the little kids in their costumes. I love that. And
there was a little tiny lion who sadly fell on the ice at the bottom of the driveway.
I tried to put the ice melt down, but it's just so much of it. And it refreezes.
I apologized. I said, "I'm sorry." And the mom said, "It's okay, he's fine." And then I heard her saying what a brave lion he was.
Aww.
He was like a little wee thing, I think maybe like three.
Aww.
So cute.
There's still lots of Elses. Like, Frozen is still so popular.
So our kids went as Isabella was Princess Leia.
Mm-hmm.
I did her hair, which is very long, into like the buns on the side. They weren't huge buns, but they were buns. And you could, like, white dress. She was Princess Leia.
Yes.
Sophie was a witch. With this fabulous witch hat that had the like full face veil that Isabella bought a couple years ago at the grocery store. Then Benedict was a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony was
Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren. He borrowed Sophie's Kylo Ren mask, which she allowed him to wear only while trick-or-treating. He could not wear it before or after. She's very, very possessive of her Kylo Ren mask. I was amazed that she let him borrow it at all. But
right.
The trick was, Anthony has Kylo Ren's lightsaber and Sophie has the Kylo Ren mask. So they couldn't both be Kylo Ren, and one of them would have had to surrender the property to the other in order. It was a master feat of negotiation.
Yes, yes. Diplomacy.
And then Lucy was a Padawan. She wore a Jedi robe, and I did her hair with one little Padawan braid at the side. The Padawan
rat tail?
Yeah. No, the rat tail's when it's in the back.
I know.
Anyway, I did her hair in a little braid, and I braided the rest of it up and pinned it up on top of her head. She was so cute.
It was very nice. I mean, it was sad because they had to wear their winter coats. That happens to New England kids. I mean, I've had that before where Halloween was so cold, you had to wear a coat over your costume. And I was sad for them that they couldn't, you know, show off their costumes to people. Like, they're walking around and hardly anyone sees them in their costume.
Well, you know? They had fun. They had fun planning their costumes and dressing up, though. I mean, to them, like, just planning out the costume and executing it is most of the fun.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm sad on their behalf. They maybe weren't sad about it, but I was sort of, you know, on their behalf. It's just, it's 2020. Everything stinks. It's just nothing can, we can't have anything good. So, yeah. So, but that means that there's a ton of candy left over.
Oh my goodness. I usually buy two bags and we have sometimes like given away all of the two bags.
Yes.
This time I gave away half of one bag and the second bag I didn't even open. So the kids will be getting candy eked out for the next month or so.
Yes. As reward for things done, completed. Keep it away from me.
Keep it away from me, too.
I mean, I kind of give myself like Halloween and the day and, you know, All Saints Day. And then from that point on, I've got to really not indulge. I do that with the holidays. I do that with Christmas. I do it with Thanksgiving, Easter. I indulge for a day or two, and then I've got to stay away from it because right. It would just be bad. So I need to do that. So, and then we got Chinese food because I always want Chinese food on my birthday.
Yes. Which was the Bettinelli family's tradition.
Yes.
We were talking about that, and the kids all said that even when they, you know, have their own places and they're adults,
even
they hope...
when I'm dead.
There was a little bit of that subtext. That they would like to continue the tradition on their own of having Chinese food at Halloween.
It's so funny because it's such a... Oh, we've talked about it, I think, before. The New England, the Boston tradition of Chinese food on New Year's Eve, which is this bizarre tradition that somehow got started. I'm not sure how. I'd love to find an article that talks about it. I bet the New England Historical Society website might have something on there if they don't. Or maybe we'll do this on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, the mystery of Chinese food on New Year's Eve.
You know, it's funny because I encountered that when I was in grad school and I was catering. Working for a catering company, And I was asked to cater a New Year's Eve event, and I was getting like time and a half. So I was like, sure, why not? I wasn't going to do anything else on New Year's Eve. And it was at this very, very nice house. And we got, not only did we get the time and a half, but we all got a really, really nice fat tip in cash at the end of the night, which was good because I think I almost died leaving because there was slush on that night, actually.
Yeah, well, New Year's Eve, you expected.
New Year's Eve. There was slush on the ground, and there was a very steep hill, and I wasn't sure I was going to make it down alive. But yeah, they had like party favors in Chinese food boxes that we were handing around, and I just thought, like, why the Chinese food box theme? Like, there was lots of everything in Chinese food takeout boxes, you know, the little cardboard ones. And somebody explained to me, well, you know, it's like Chinese food on New Year's. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. It was.
Well, and the funny thing is when you're from here, you just assume that this is something everybody does, right? Don't you do this in Texas? Like, everybody has Chinese food on New Year's. No, they don't. It's just...
I mean, maybe there are other parts of the country where they do it, but yes. It's certainly not something I was
certainly
familiar with.
Probably places with lots of Chinese restaurants, the you know, authentic especially, you know, we're run by Chinese people. Not Ohio, where I was horrified to go to a Chinese restaurant and there was all like Westerners there, like people from European extraction and no Chinese immigrants running it, which like a real good Chinese restaurant should have Chinese immigrants running it. At least that was my perception at the time. And so, yeah, so we had Chinese food, which is good. And that's our Halloween tradition. And
we usually don't do the birthday cake. On Halloween.
There's already way too much sugar. And just too much hullabaloo.
Right.
You know, just getting the costumes on.
I think I did once or twice. I tried to do a birthday and it was just like, it was too much.
Yeah.
So we did a birthday cake tonight.
Yes. Which was nice. Thank you. It was a good cake. And today was a more relaxed day. Kids watched some Star Wars, just hung out. Yeah. I went to mass. It was my turn to take the kids this morning and that would go. And yeah, it was quiet Sunday, rainy Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Rainy.
So speaking of food that we've been eating, we didn't have anything unusual and any new recipes this week. But what we did have, we'd had chicken curry, but it was made with a curry mix that I got for online. Now, I have to give a disclaimer. We're going to get a new sponsor on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. This guy who listens, who's a patron of the show, who is a listener and fan, who also owns a mail order curry spice mix, Colchester Curry House spice mix company. So it's like an online e-tailer. And so I wanted to try it out, and I ordered it. I spent my own money. I wasn't looking for freebies from him, although he did throw in an extra one for me, you know, of another kind. And so you made it, made curry with it, and it was really good.
It was really good.
Yeah, I'm not just saying it because he's a sponsor. I genuinely think it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, you looked up a recipe, and
he has recipes on his site. Right. He got the mixes from his mother. She it was her recipes, and then the recipes that to make the curry.
Yeah, I mean, I confess, I pretty much just made my usual curry, and I did not follow the recipe because we tend to fiddle with curry recipes a lot and add a lot of vegetables to it.
Yeah.
We make it into a sort of a one pot meal with lots of the veggies in the pot rather than making, I know traditional Indian cuisine would have a lot of different side dishes.
Like, right. You'd have the protein, like the chicken in the sauce.
Right.
And then you'd have a different vegetable dishes that
I,
which is I, great, but just,
I would
hard
love
to
be able to do that. I aspire to that. I am just not there yet.
Yeah.
I do not know how to manage that many dishes all boom, 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 one after another. I'm not good at it.
So, but it was, you did add something from the recipe, which is mustard seed?
Yeah. I don't usually add mustard seeds to my curry. I do make a couple of vegetable sides. When I do make vegetable sides, I usually make like one. And there's a...
Oh, the carrot and cabbage?
There's a carrot and cabbage dish I make that uses mustard seeds in it. And I really do like the flavor. So I thought I would try that. And so that was one new addition to my traditional curry was the brown mustard seeds.
Yeah, that was good. It was really good. I'm looking forward to trying the other masala mix next time.
Maybe next time I'll let you make it and do some experimental.
Sure. That'll be fun. So that was good. So let's talk about, and that's the only food things we've got to talk about this week. It's been we've talked about this before, ups and downs. Like there are times when we are making lots of interesting new dishes. And then there are times when we're sticking with the standbys. And I think that's often in transitions between seasons.
Probably.
You know, between summer and fall and fall and winter.
Also just like how busy I am, how much other things I've got on my plate.
And having to make new recipes can be
right.
A whole nother.
Right now, the kids have started going back to in-person scout meetings, and that is a couple evenings a week. Which,
Monday night and Tuesday night.
Right.
Right.
And that right there is like a couple nights when if they've got a scout meeting, I am not doing...
Right, because those are at 7.
Right, so I'm doing a quick meal.
Yeah. Right, that's true. So, all right, let's talk about what we've been watching and reading. I've been doing a lot more watching. I'm still reading, but I'm still reading Dresden Files, and you don't want to hear me talk about that every week. So I'll let you know when I read something other than Dresden Files. I started watching this new series on Disney Plus, National Geographic's The Right Stuff. Now, this is... If you're familiar with it, you might have heard of The Right Stuff, the movie from the 80s. I think it's the 80s.
About the astronauts?
About the astronauts. Mercury 7 astronauts. And then that movie, and that was based on the Tom Wolfe book from even earlier about the Mercury 7, which I read. So I read that back then. And then... I don't think I ever saw that movie, but I started watching the series, and it's interesting because it's a bit of a warts and all story. And so John Glenn comes across as, and he was the third man to go up in the Mercury astronaut in the Mercury capsule, first one to orbit the Earth. Alan Shepard was the first American in orbit, but it was a suborbital flight. He went up and down. And then Gus Grissom was in between them, and he always gets forgotten, poor Gus. So it was all 7 astronauts, but John Glenn is sort of the goody two shoes of the group. He doesn't drink. he's faithful to his wife. He is the most political of them all, the most schmoozing of
right.
you know, people. He always is thinking about the program and the greater good. The other guys are a bit more wild. It really comes across as a rivalry between Alan Shepard and Gus and John Glenn. And there was some of that. I think they sort of have dramatized it a little bit more.
Understandable.
Yeah. And Shepard comes across as a bit of a cad. You know, he does fool around. And they're evidently that was part of it. But then you have Gordon Cooper and his wife. And they had marital problems going into the program. And it's really the focus is on them and those three astronauts and their families. And there was an interesting episode, which is based on a real thing, which is Alan Shepard's wife's sister died. And she had a daughter who was about 10 and was an only child. It was an only child. And I don't know where the dad was, but the child had to come live with them. And the girl's name was Judith. And they already had a daughter named Julia. And for some reason, the family decided that Judy and Julie sounded too much alike. So they decided that her name would be Martha.
They changed her name?
Yes.
To Martha?
Yeah.
So poor girl. So, like, not only did her mom die, but like she got her name changed.
So on the Christmas, Shepard's dad comes to visit. And so Shepard is a captain in the Navy. Shepard's dad is a U.S. Army colonel, not general, colonel.
Okay.
Or who's the commander in the Navy? But anyway.
So we got the Army-Navy rivalry?
Yeah, so the dad was evidently not happy that his son went into the Navy. But they're sitting on the table and he kind of is like, Martha, I thought your name was Judith. And we decided that it was this. And he kind of defends her. Like, he stands up for her and says, you know, I forget the exact wording, but it was sort of this calling them on it. But then, like, the girl is sitting next to him and she's got her elbow on the table. He grabs her wrist and bangs her elbow on the table and says, no elbows. Like, so he's the strict disciplinarian sort of guy. So he elevates himself to the heights of being her champion and then lowers himself to being an abusing jerk right in one stroke.
Wow.
And so Shepard stands up for the girl and says, oh, by the way, mom and dad, I forgot to tell you, Judith is in the spare bedroom and so you'll have to get a hotel. This is Christmas Eve.
Oh, man.
And that was that. So the next day... Oh, and the dad had made some remark about there not being an American flag flying on the pole out front, because Shepard is in Florida at Cape Canaveral while his family's still living in Virginia, so he's not there every day. So the next day, Christmas, he takes the girl out to the flagpole and tells her that from now on, this is your job. I'm going to teach you to do this. And he's giving her a thing to be part of the family.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, do you like being Martha? She's like, not really. Do you have a name that you would prefer? He says, yes. And he says, what name would you like? I want to be Alan.
Alan?
After him. Because he's
okay.
He's a hero. He's an astronaut. And he's like, and so he said, it might be a little unusual for a girl to be Alan. How about Alice? And she's like, okay. Based on a true story, didn't exactly happen that way. And it was actually several years before he became an astronaut that it all happened. But it was a real situation.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an interesting story.
So it's an interesting series. I'm enjoying it. It's a little too much of the prurient. Like they're kind of hyping up the sexy sex part of it in order to make it more dramatic, I guess. Because it's not dramatic enough shooting guys into space on top of missiles.
the human interest.
Oh. Yeah, I know. The interpersonal drama. So that was that. The other thing I watched was I finished the first season of Tehran, which is the Apple TV Plus series. It's a spy thriller series.
Didn't you mention that last week?
I mentioned before that I had started watching it. I finished the first season. And just in retrospect and just wrapping that up, well worth it. There were times I'm like, this is kind of dragging. They're dragging out the story to make it a whole season's worth. But in the end, it was pretty interesting. I did enjoy it. The fact that it was like 90% in either Farsi or Hebrew made it a little hard for me to follow.
Yeah, so you basically have to be really on the ball reading subtitles.
You have to be paying attention, right? Yeah. There's a little bit of English at times, but mostly in Farsi. My favorite part was when they would show something on the screen of like a phone, and then they would put the subtitle of what you're seeing on the phone screen. I know we talked about it before. That's for the hearing impaired. I mean the visually impaired,
right?
To get it, because the caption screen readers, I get it. Still funny. And then we all watched Friday.
The Mandalorian.
Season 2, Episode 1. All right. You tell me. What did you think?
Okay. I really liked it. It, again, another classic Western story where the Mandalorian is sort of the stranger come to town and the townspeople are in need of defending and he steps up and defends them. The episode was called The Marshal, and I don't want to give away any plot points.
No spoilers.
The Marshal is important in the story. Of course, we have the child. And I really like the fact that we are going back to some of the places that we've gone to before and meeting some of the people again who we've met before.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, okay, these weren't one-off characters who we just saw in season one. We saw them one time and then they're gone. It's nice to see that he's got these developing relationships.
I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of the guy I went to school with, or maybe even the girl you went to school with. We both know people who were actors.
Yes. But I know people who know her.
Oh, okay. Well, I went to school with the guy from the Prison Break episode. In the name, I've lost the name. I'm sorry, but
right. One of my favorite bits in the episode, and this isn't too spoilery, is that you get to see more of the sand people, the Tusken Raiders.
Yes.
On Tatooine. And you get a little bit more sense of them as like
people.
People, not monster creatures, scary things, but like actual people with a culture and a language and a civilization. And I liked that. Mm-hmm. I like that the Mandalorian seems to be fleshing out parts of the Star Wars universe that the movies don't really have time to flesh out.
The movies and their heroes kind of skim above everything, whereas the series kind of dig in to them.
Yeah, I really like that. I really like the feeling of this is a place that has a history and a culture, and there's just more to it. I like the depth.
Yes. I like the fact that also they really dig into Star Wars lore outside of the movies. Like stuff that happened in some of the books that are still considered to be canon are vital to this story. Like there's a major character who's pulled right out of the books, which is fantastic. I love that because it's a real, you don't need to have read the book to appreciate it.
I have not read the book and I probably never will.
Yeah. I wouldn't because the books were, this particular series of books was not all that great, but if you have read them, it's like, wow, okay, yeah, that's part of that, you know. There was another character also pulled up from that was in the movie, Snap Wexley, who was he was Greg Grunberg, who was always in J.J. Abrams movies, and he was also in Lost. He was the pilot in Lost.
Oh, yeah.
He was a X-Wing pilot in Force Awakens and in Rise of Skywalker. But he was Snap Wexley, who was a kid in the books that the character was in. Spoilers! Right. But anyway, so it was really good. And the kids were all so excited. It was like Christmas Eve the night before.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, they were actually, they were having trouble sleeping. They were having insomnia because they were so looking forward to season two of The Mandalorian.
They were having dreams of Baby Yoda.
I love how much this is sort of keystone to their childhood. It's really fun.
Star Wars is even bigger for them than it was for me as a kid. Like I have to say, like I had more exposure to a wider variety of TV shows and movies than they have. I mean, my parents just let me watch more things. I'd be open to them to seeing some of the stuff. They just don't get as much TV time as I did, which, you know, for good or for ill. But so for them, Star Wars is most of what they've ever seen.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of their imaginative world.
I mean, in some ways, I feel like maybe they should be seeing more things. Maybe we should be giving them more opportunities to watch shows. You know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, or
I think there will be time, and there will be time.
Okay, I mean, we did, a couple years ago. We watched Tora Tora, and we watched some John Wayne movies, and we did some of that.
Yeah,
but we haven't done as much. Anyway, so what did you watch?
So a friend of mine on Facebook posted a really intriguing post. She said, right now, you must go watch this miniseries. It was on both streaming on PBS if you had a membership, which I don't. But it was also on Amazon Prime. Sadly, yesterday, Saturday, was the last day it was streaming on Amazon Prime
for free.
I think you could probably buy it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked. Okay. Anyway, it was called Mrs. Wilson, and it's based on a true story. And the lead actor is also the executive producer, Ruth Wilson, and she plays in the movie a character who's based on her own grandmother, which was intriguing. I did not realize that at the time I was watching it. Now, I went into this not knowing anything at all. Just my friend Dorian said, you've got to watch this. It's really good. Just drop everything and do that tonight. It was 3 episodes long, so it was not a huge time investment. I watched all 3 episodes back to back on one night and then went and told all my other Facebook friends that they needed to watch it. And several of them did. So Mrs. Wilson, essentially, she's married. Her husband dies and she finds out that he had a secret past that she had not known anything about. And he was a spy, and he was a serial polygamist. He had been married to 4 women.
Is that different than just a regular polygamist?
Well, I think because he was married, he wasn't married to them, like, 4 women all at the same time. It was like he was married to one, and then he was married to another, and then she left, and then he was married to another one.
Okay. Like, it wasn't all 4 at the same time. He wasn't managing 4 different families.
Yeah.
But okay.
There was at least a period of time. Right. There was at least a period. Well, not always. There was one who was first.
Well, yes.
But yeah, there was a period of time, I think, when he was managing maybe visiting 3 different families. The timeline is a little bit spotty. And I think there's some deliberateness. Both they're playing with what actually happened by making it more dramatic. It seems like probably the point of view character did not actually ever find out about 2 of the other wives. She only found out about 1 of the other wives. The others came out later on, I think, after she died. The families eventually found each other.
Mm.
The children or the grandchildren, I think, found each other. And so they amped up some of the drama. They shortened, condensed the timeline. There was some suggestions that maybe she might have found some letters that talked about the other wives. She mentioned something in, I think, her memoir. Anyway, she wrote a memoir. Her name was Allison Wilson. Of course, they're all, interestingly enough, they're all Mrs. Wilson, all 4 of them.
Right.
So the title had this sort of nice multiple meanings. Like,
right.
As you go into the movie, the show, you don't really know.
You think
know.
It's the first Mrs. Wilson you meet.
Right. It turns out he was only legally married to the first one. The others were all not legally his wife, though they all believed that they were.
Right.
He was Catholic, interestingly enough. And that actually.
And British, right?
This is all British. He did work for at least some period of time for MI6.
That's James Bond.
James Bond.
The CIA of Britain.
Right.
Yeah.
What's unclear, both in the show and also in real life, is to what extent he worked for them and for how long. He claimed to be on missions at a time when they claimed that he wasn't, that he had been fired. But he also claimed that the whole firing was a pretense in order to for him to be able to go undercover. And, you know, this is just the way it works. It's not clear if he's telling the truth or if he's lying, if he's spinning fables.
He's got a bad track record of fabulism.
He was also a published novelist. He wrote something like 25 novels. So he was perhaps sort of embodying, living out his fictions in real life. It's not clear. But I loved the way faith really plays a huge part in the movie, the way it's told. And I loved the theme of forgiveness that runs through it. Mrs. Wilson, our point of view character, has a lot to forgive.
Yeah.
And watching her like uncover the truth and process it and deal with it was, I mean, it was really powerful. It was really good storytelling. It was gripping and it was fabulous. I really highly recommend it. It's worth paying to see, even though it's no longer free on Prime.
Good. Excellent.
Yeah.
And then what'd you read this week?
This week, I've been making some progress on several of my books that I've been reading, but I did pick up and finish one juvenile novel. It was mentioned on, I'm on several different homeschooling Facebook groups, and one of them is sort of a group that is trying to bring more international culture to, like, finding books of from all over the place. So this is a book that was written by an Indian woman. Her name was...
It's right here. Veera Hiranandani.
Veera Hiranandani, right. And the book was called The Night Diary. And it takes place at the time, at the very end of World War II, of partition between India and Pakistan. And the main character is a girl, I think she's about 12. And as the title suggests, Night Diary, the story is told through her diary. It's a diary that she's writing to her mom who died when she was born. And there, so there's a sort of a poignancy where she's addressing this mom who she's never known and she wishes she knew. And then she's undergoing, and then of course the family are Hindus living in what becomes Pakistan. So overnight, they have to leave Pakistan because they're Hindu and move to India where she's never lived. She has a twin brother, and they live with their father, who's a doctor, and their grandmother. It turns out that the mother was Muslim and the father was Hindu, and so they had a mixed marriage, which was controversial and involved a lot of protests over the protests of their family. As they end up trekking across the desert, leaving their house and almost all of their possessions behind, she ends up meeting her mother's brother, who she forms a connection with, which is really sweet. And then they wind up in India trying to start a new life as refugees. It was very gripping. It was perhaps not for the most sensitive kids. They almost die in the desert of thirst, dehydration. She does witness some murders, and she has somebody pull a knife on her. So there's some scary stuff. But overall, I was really impressed. A lot of times these sort of historical novels for kids, it feels like the characters exist in order for the kids to find out about the history. And the character is almost an afterthought. They're kind of like a puppet almost who moves through the historical events.
Right.
I really, really connected with the girl and her brother, especially. The girl's name is Nisha, and her brother is... I cannot remember his name. Adil, maybe? But she's kind of got selective mutism. She doesn't talk to most people. Even within her family, she frequently doesn't talk to them. And her brother seems to be dyslexic. And so there's a really interesting sort of theme of, like, communication difficulties. They both have to be accepted by their families for who they are, which is not necessarily who their family initially wants them to be.
Right.
And so I really thought there were a lot of different layers of storytelling going on. It wasn't just about the partition and the horrific events, but there was also a lot of really good interpersonal character development. I really, really liked it. So I highly recommend that, The Night Diary.
Excellent. Thank you. So that's what we've been reading and watching. And if you have anything you've read or watched, we'd love to hear from you. And if you've got any recommendations for us, we're always looking forward to new recommendations. Let's talk about our last topic. And this is listener participation. We need your help. So we've been... Our shopping, we generally do at our local grocery store in this area. It's Stop and Shop. It's just a regular grocery store. And we do a lot of our pharmaceuticals, like our you know, whether it's over-the-counter or farm, you know, prescription medications, we get that. It's either CVS or Walgreens. But with the number of allergies in our family and the number of antihistamines and whatnot, the over-the-counter stuff is really expensive. And so you heard, what did you hear?
Well... Right. I end up buying like Benadryl, Zyrtec, Claritin, and some of us are taking like multiple allergies during the worst of the allergy seasons. I have sort of a vague impression. I'm not like, I can't point to a specific I heard from such and such a person, but I have the vague impression that a lot of over-the-counter medicines are cheaper at some of the big
discount warehouse
stores.
Sort of the Costco's, BJ, Sam's Club, that sort of place.
Right. So I keep kind of wondering, like, as I buy my monthly supply of Zyrtec, and I'm always kind of appalled at how much it is.
even the like Walgreens or CVS.
Right, brand. Right. I always buy the generic. I do not buy the, and I usually end up having a coupon. But I can't help but wonder if I would like if. We would save enough to make a membership worthwhile. But the fact is that I have avoided getting a membership, even though I grew up, like, my dad had a Sam's Club membership, and I...
Your dad is a Sam's Club groupie.
He is. And when I was in college, I had a card, like, that was my parents' Sam's Club membership. So I'm used to shopping it there. My experience was that I usually ended up buying more on top of my usual grocery bill.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I was saving money. I was just buying bulk of stuff that I wouldn't have otherwise bought.
Right. We had a BJ's card in our family when I was a kid. And that's what happened a lot. We bought like a lot of my impression is these places are a lot of bulk packaged goods. And so like packaged like cans of soup or packaged boxed meals or frozen foods, like convenience foods and all this stuff in bulk. And so I've always, since we've been married, is like, we've never really had the space to store such things.
We do not have a lot of storage space.
And we don't generally cook that way. Like we, you know, we'll have ramen, we'll have crackers, and, you know, we have cans of ingredients, but we don't do a lot of canned soup or I'm trying to think of like, the other things that we don't do a lot of like frozen pizzas or frozen meals, like lasagna in a box or that sort of stuff. It's not snobbery. It's expensive.
Right. Well, and especially with the food issues that we have.
The allergies and the aversions.
Allergies and food aversions and such. I don't feel like I would take advantage. We did briefly have a membership to something. Was it BJ's?
Ages ago, when we lived on the North Shore, right?
When we were first married, and I always end up feeling like the price per can on like tomatoes and stuff wasn't really much cheaper than at the grocery store.
And you were having to make a second trip.
And I was having to make a second trip, which I am very loath to leave the house for shopping. I am not one of these people who is out multiple times a week.
Some people love to go to shop at several different stores to get the best price on everything.
My goal is generally to be out of the house as little as possible and to make as few trips during the week as possible. And I hate shopping. Like, I hate making a trip where I'm stopping at like five different places in a row.
Yeah.
I'm homeschooling. That takes up most of my time. When I go shopping, it's coming out of my school day.
Okay, so that's the case against.
That's the case against.
So, but we've heard that you could get over-the-counter medications, which we spend quite a bit of money on, for a lot less, which I've started to hear from people as I've been asking around that this is true. You can get this the stuff even cheaper than the generics at Walgreens and CVS in bulk. And some people are like, oh, but you have to get in bulk. For us, in bulk is not a problem. That's a feature, not a bug.
Right, because we are already buying. I mean, we can't buy in bulk in a lot of these things because they just don't sell more than.
Right.
I mean.
So the question then becomes, which do we go to? We don't really have a Sam's Club around here, so that's not even an issue. So the question is BJ's or Costco? And it's not a matter of which one is local or closer. We have one of each equally distant, essentially. They're just like BJ's is over here. Costco is right there.
Neither one of them is especially convenient.
Right, especially convenient or especially inconvenient. They're about the same distance. So which one do we go to? They cost about the same for membership. And apparently they have the prices are about the same. Now, I've been hearing from folks online and about some things like people bring up, oh, like the gas is cheaper. We're not going to buy gas at either the Costco's or BJ's if they even sell them at either one, because it's way out of the way.
Going that far out of the way for gas.
And we won't be going to these places often enough where it makes sense to go to them regularly for gas.
Right. And they're not anywhere near where we would be happening to drive by on our way to somewhere else we would go. This would be a special trip out of the way.
We're not going to be going often enough that it makes sense to get gas at these places. So other people have brought up, well, you can get a lot of the packaged goods. Again, we've said it many times. We have no room to store a bunch of bulk stuff. Our house just doesn't have storage. So, I mean, some of it, but not a lot. I've heard that like meats and other things are less expensive. Same at both. So the question is which one should we get? BJ's or Costco?
Well, first of all, should we get a membership? Is it worthwhile?
Right. So far I've been hearing that yes. I haven't heard anyone say, and I've heard I've asked on Facebook, and everyone on Facebook has pretty much said that they believe it's worthwhile. I've not heard from anyone who said it's not worthwhile. So there's that.
But I wonder, are there shopping patterns close enough to ours that it's fair to make that?
I would love to hear from someone say, I looked at it, thought about it, I said, this isn't worth it.
Or who actually tried it and ended up giving up your membership because, you know what? We're paying more in membership than we're saving on stuff that we buy.
Right.
If we just went to our local
grocery store. It's $55 or $60 a year. That comes down to we'd have to save $5 a month.
Which doesn't seem like.
That seems possible.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it would be hard to do.
Right.
Even if we only went every couple months.
And even if it was only just for over-the-counter medications, we didn't buy anything else, I can imagine we could save $5 a month.
Right.
Yeah. So that's possible.
How many bottles of Zyrtec do we buy in a year, and how could we save enough to...
Yeah, someone was saying, oh, I forget what it was. Mary Gibson was saying she was actually giving actual prices on the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Ibuprofen, all that stuff. So there's that. So in the BJ's versus Costco thing, one of the things that several people brought up, including Mark Arlinghouse, was Costco is known for treating its employees really well and better than the other places.
That would actually weigh pretty heavily in my favor in terms of.
Yes.
I would like to support a business that treats its employees well.
In fact, someone said, oh, but they're closed on holidays, which I think is a plus.
Right. I am not going to be shopping on holidays myself. And I would like to support with my dollars a business that is willing to give its employees the holidays off. Yes. To me, that would actually be something that would be.
Right.
A point in their favor.
Now, something that is not a factor for us is people say, oh, well, Costco is nationwide. BJ's is not as national. It doesn't matter to me.
The chances of us moving.
Or just going someplace, like on vacation or somewhere where we would need to. We don't travel that much.
No, we don't.
So that's not a factor. So, yeah, I'd love to hear from anyone. If you've got an opinion on it, if you've got experience in what we're talking about, I'd love to hear from you and let us know what you think, because we're probably going to do this. Oh, the other thing is the booze. They have house brand alcohol, liquors.
At both or just at one?
I think Costco has it. I forget which one this one person was talking about, but they were saying they like their house brand Bailey's better than the Bailey's Irish Cream. Their house brand
Irish Cream.
Yeah. So And I do remember that from previously having a BJ's membership is they have a big section where you can get beer and liquor and wine.
Okay, honestly, I used to use my dad's Sam's Club membership to buy beer when I was in college. When I was
of age, of course, you never had a fake ID.
I never did. but my senior year.
Do you believe her?
My senior year, we had an apartment where it was legal for us to drink if we were of age. And we were, all of my roommates and I were of age. And we did have parties. And
actually,
I
do believe you.
We did buy beer at Sam's Club for that.
Okay. So what was the other thing? Oh, another thing was people often bring up is the food court and the food. Like they have the best pizza. Okay. That's fine. I'm not sure that's going to be a big deal for us, but okay. And what was it? Tom McDonald said the Costco's roast chicken, like you can buy the rotisserie chicken. He said it's like food crack. So I may have to test that out. One thing I remember from as a kid, just the last thing.
Okay.
My mom used to buy these big flats of these giant blueberry muffins. They were awesome.
See, to me, like when people start to rave about the baked goods, that makes me more concerned because the last thing I really need to do
is buy more baked
goods. Is buy lots of baked goods that I will eat. And then like,
yes,
it's a struggle every week just going to the grocery store. I'm so tempted to say, you know what? Going to the grocery store is really tough and miserable. I deserve a treat for going to the grocery store. And like, I'm passing the bakery counter and I'm like, oh, I deserve a croissant for going shopping this week. And then, you know, Isabella comes with me and she's pushing my cart for me. And like, I'm like,
she deserves a treat.
Isabella deserves a treat. All they have are two packs. So I guess I'll have to buy a two pack of croissants and give her one and have one for myself. The struggle is real. The struggle is real. I do not need extra calories in my diet. I'm really trying to produce.
Well, that's going to be a big thing is if we do this, it's got to be a discipline. It's a list of things. You get just a list and not buying all kinds of stuff.
This is where I worry because I am not good at.
And maybe I'm the one who goes to Costco.
Do I trust you to just buy on the list and not?
I have no idea impulse? What this calumny against my character that I would buy things that aren't on the list and maybe eat them before I get home in the car.
I would never expect to see wrappers from places that you've gone. No. I know what you're talking about.
I would only get the things we need. Anyway, we could go on. So let's wrap it up.
Okay.
So as we do wrap it up, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Josette S, Mary H, Noe L, Jeffrey H, and Janet W. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback for us, especially if you have feedback on BJ's versus Costco, let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. You can find relevant links for our discussion, especially for all of the shows and books, in our show notes at sqpn.com. I do want to recommend, we talked about The Mandalorian. If you want to hear some great spoiler-ish Mandalorian discussion, check out The Secrets of Star Wars at sqpn.com/StarWars. You can subscribe to that show and our show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel. We should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.